was getting us into. More specifically, what I was getting you into. And I'm genuinely sorry about that. Levi was too stunned to do anything but nod. He'd never heard Bianca apologize. He'd always thought remorse was beyond her. "I'm set on making it up to you," she said. "I thought you should know." Oh, no, he thought, sure that whatever gift she was planning would prove to be another death sentence in disguise. "Go rest," she told him. "By tomorrow the whole city will know. By tomorrow everything will be different." Levi mumbled some parting words and rejoined his friends in the other room. Lola and Jack were bickering about something, and En was finishing off the remaining crumbs in a box of cookies. The scene was so normal he wanted to laugh, if doing so wouldn't make his whole body ache.
"Bianca has arranged accommodations for me at Zula Slicks," he said.
En set down the box, her lips pursed. "You have to go there?"
"I'm leaving tomorrow. Bianca offered up your apartment for all of us tonight."
She raised her eyebrows. How generous of her. Several minutes later, the four of them were sneaking silently down the stairs toward En's apartment on the 18th floor. Her hallway was mainly for staff, and no one was awake at this hour. It wasn't quite sunrise. En fumbled with her keys in her pocket, then unlocked the door.
"I'm getting the couch," Jack declared. "Dove, you can have the floor."
Eager as he was for rest, Levi hadn't dwelled on the potential awkwardness of their sleeping arrangements. En's apartment was very much designed for one person, one bed, one couch. He swallowed down the heat building in his stomach, creeping its way to his face.
"The girls get the bed," Lola said dryly. "You changed your minds about wanting to kill her, what, yesterday? Are you sure you deserve slumber party status?"
Jack then shot Levi the dirtiest, most suggestive look he could manage, as if he were being helpful. Levi's face went hot in embarrassment. En cleared her throat, looking everywhere but at Levi.
"Yes, the girls get the bed."
"If you think I'm sleeping on the floor," Levi growled at his second, "you're mucking mistaken."
Then, when En and Lola had disappeared into the bedroom, Levi smacked Jack on the back of the head.
"Don't do that."
"I was trying to help you."
"Yes, don't do that. You don't normally need my help." "Enough."
Levi kicked him off the couch and stretched out on the cushions. It wasn't the most comfortable, but he wasn't anticipating getting much sleep. Not with the sirens calling from the streets below. Not while thinking about En asleep in the next room. He closed his eyes anyway and tried to quiet his mind. The water in the bathroom was running. He peeked one eye open.
"I should say goodnight," he mused out loud.
"Yes, you should."
Levi gave him a rude gesture as he stood up and walked to the bathroom. En was in a nightdress, leaning over the sink and removing the contacts from her eyes.
"You were right," she said, blinking painfully. "They do hurt."
She snapped the contact case closed and turned to him, shaking her head. Her eyes were slightly bloodshot, and very purple.
"Stop looking at me like that," she snapped.
"I can't help it.
I already feel like I'm wearing a costume, like this isn't actually my face."
She pressed her hands against her cheeks, as if making sure her other features were still the same. Jack shouted from the next room.
"Oh, are your contacts gone? Do we get to see?"
"I'm not a sideshow," she muttered.
Jack appeared in the doorway. He gaped at her, then gave an exaggerated bow.
"You look like Queen Marceline."
"Before or after she was beheaded?" En shoved him away, grimacing.
"And look at this," she told Levi, leading him into the bedroom. Lola
was perched on the edge of the bed, looking very absurd in one of En's nightdresses. She glared at him suspiciously and wrapped a blanket around herself.
"Oh, is she showing you the magic coin?"
Lola asked. And Levi scratched his arm nervously.
"Is that a euphemism for something?"
"Lola's just saying it like that because she can't see what I'm talking about." En grabbed a large bronze coin off her dresser, one slightly larger than her token. It was the same one she'd shown to Zula. She pointed to the cameo of the king on its face.
"Look at his eye. It's purple.
Levi examined both the coin and N with mild concern.
You've been wearing those contacts too long.
Behind him, he sensed Lola creeping out of the room. N groaned.
I swear it's purple, and feel it, it's warm.
She thrust it into his hand.
You've been holding it, he said.
It was on my nightstand, and you remember how Zula talked about it?
He rubbed his temples and set it back down.
They all needed some rest. Yes, it's very spooky.
You're giving me that smirk again.
This is just my face, he said,
stepping closer and smirking wider. She had to tilt her head to look up at him.
Yes, it's very vexing.
I'm sorry my face vexes you.
They grew silent. Levi was all too aware of the tumbling violet waves and smoky smells of her aura, of the heat of her skin, of how close they were to each other. What was actually vexing was that she was giving him that look again, that biting her lip, holding her breath look that tempted him so damn much.
I'm not positive when we'll next see each other, he said.
Bianca said she wanted to talk to me again in the morning, she said, grimacing. She said she has plans. We should talk afterward. She flushed and looked away from him.
I'll find us a place in Old Town to meet.
That was how all their meetings would have to be from now on. Secret. This was the life he had ahead of him, and he already knew the most dangerous thing he could do was fall for someone like N. Levi had flirted with disaster for over a year now, and everything in his life had crumbled for it. It was time he focused on the empire he was always meant to build. It was time he played his cards safe. Even if he didn't want to.
It's late,
they both said at the same time. Get some rest, she said, smiling weakly.
You too.
Levi walked back to the sitting room with his stomach in knots. He'd made his decision. But, so help him, if N had called his name, if she'd turned him around, asked him to come back, he would have surrendered to his desire without a second thought. Lola and Jack were whispering conspiratorially on the couch.
You can stop gossiping, Levi said flatly. Let's all go to sleep.
He shooed them away, lay down and closed his eyes, making it clear he didn't want to talk.
We had bets,
Jack said.
Good night, Jack. I owe Lola 3 volts now.
Sirens blared from outside the window, which didn't make for the best lullaby. Levi listened to his pulse beat against the throw pillow. It reminded him of the timer ticking down during the shadow game, and those 10 seconds when he'd thought for sure he was a dead man. But he wasn't dead yet. The City of Sin was a game, but not everyone was a player. Before tonight, Levi hadn't just wanted to play, he'd wanted to win. He'd thought all that separated the players from the observers was desire. That had been his first mistake. He hadn't understood the rules. The game wasn't about empires and legends and legacies. It was about power. And it was about death. It was too late to fold. The city had brutally marked him a player tonight. But if he wanted to survive, he needed to change his strategy. Desire would undoubtedly be his downfall, as Semper had remarked before the Shadow Game.
People don't play this game to win, my dear. They play this game not to lose.
Nevertheless, when the sirens finally lulled Levi to sleep, he didn't dream of caution or escape. He dreamed of being king. Epilogue. In a city several hours south of New Rains, one less merciless and despicable, a telephone rang in the hour before sunrise. A man slid out of bed, careful not to wake the woman beside him. He reached for 3 things, an eye patch, a robe, and a gun. The eye patch, because his left eye was gone, cleaved out many years ago on the night New Rains caught fire. The robe, because it was naked. The gun, because he knew better than to be without it. He slipped silently into the hall, where the phone was ringing. He picked up the receiver, but didn't speak.
You told me never to call, a woman said, unless I had an opportunity.
It had been many years, but her monotone, lifeless voice was still recognizable, still made the man shiver. They weren't friends, but they shared a common enemy. He considered hanging up. It had been 18 years since he stepped foot in the City of Sin, and at some point during his travels, he'd promised himself to never return. Unlike the city where he lived now, the man was both merciless and despicable, but not entirely so. And new reigns had a way of corrupting whatever remained of a pure soul. As he moved to end the call, the woman spoke louder. "You'll be delighted to hear who has died." He quickly pulled the phone back to his ear. "Was it my mother?" "No." Wishful thinking, he thought. His mother was too stubborn to die. "It was Semper. And Cedric Torren," the woman said. The man's eye widened. 18 years of peace, and new reigns might just catch fire again.
"Tell me what happened, and what you're offering."
The woman recounted the story of what had occurred only hours before, of two street lords named Seance and Levi Glazier.
"I accept," he said.
"There's a train leaving at 6. A man will be waiting for you there, and he'll escort you to the House of Shadows." She hung up. The man lowered the receiver to its cradle and returned to his room. It had been a useless promise, he knew. One born out of frustration, waiting for that phone call, waiting for his chance. No matter how many cities he visited or how many people he met, it didn't matter. His destiny had always been in the City of Sin, to burn his mother's empire down. Within minutes, Harrison Augustine had dressed, packed his belongings, and walked to the station. Even hours away, he sensed the rising smoke of new rains. It tasted sweet. This concludes the reading of Ace of Shades by Amanda Foody. Copyright 2018 by Amanda Foody. This book was read by Saskia Malleveld. This unabridged recording was produced by arrangement with Harlequin Teen and was produced in 2018 by Blackstone Publishing, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Publishing. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.